You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
It didn't really matter. I knew what I had to do. I knew what my job was. I knew what my expectations were. And I don't think there was any real matter of conformity other than attire. Really, wear a suit and tie when you're on the client side. You can take your tie off when you're in the office. That was about it as far as like culture existed in the office. And the rest was common sense. Like, obviously, don't harass each other. Don't use profanity. You know, it was like real.
That's not common sense.
Well, then that's just stupidity. It's not culture, though, right? Like, you're either stupid or you're competent. And I was thinking about that, too. I'm like, what? Because I really liked your guys' episode when you were talking about, are you a cultural fit? And that's what made me want to fucking puke all over myself. I was like, yeah. Oh my God, if somebody told me that, I would die. Because I thought about this too as an analogy for you. Like, let's say you work at a mechanic shop, or you're applying for a mechanic shop and they work on like muscle cars and they're drag racing them, you know, and they are trying to hire somebody to make them faster. So if I walk in and I'm a nerd, you know, with the tape on my center rim of my glasses, but I went to MIT and I went to Harvard, and I can guarantee you that I can make your car 30 miles per hour faster. And you go, but he's not a car guy. He doesn't really fit into our grease monkey culture. If you don't hire me, you're fucking stupid.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides a person who happens to be in charge.
This is the Leadership in Tech podcast, episode number 67, featuring a very special guest, Douglas Louse, formerly CIA case officer and New York Times best-selling author, joins us to discuss his book, Left of Boom, How a Young CIA Case Officer Penetrated the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, as well as his career and his take on things related to culture and much more. This is episode number 67, part 1 of our interview with Douglas Louse of the Leadership in Tech podcast, season 3. Check back next week for part 2.
Maybe you got lucky, maybe you worked real hard, and just maybe that doesn't make you smart.
When I read your book, and I told you this, I was like, this is my life.
Yeah.
This is a parallel life.
Yeah.
So, you know, your book, right? We're talking Left of Boom, New York Times bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
And where I want to start with, where it hit you was, you're a young guy, you join the CIA, you get an opportunity to go about the worst area you can.
Yep.
And you get there and you run into, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what the fuck is going on? You like,
right.
What is this? We're not ready for anything? You know, mm-hmm. Kind of walk through the shock that was that. You know, what you had anticipated and what you actually saw.
Well, I think, you know, I also mentioned it towards the end of the book, kind of going backwards to start. As I say, like towards the end of the book, you know, when I'm talking with the guy who was in charge of HR, and I say, hey, I think it's time for me to leave. And he's like, okay, well, what? You think you're going to go on like LWOP, which you know what LWOP is, right? Like leave without pay. Like you can just leave and come back like in a year. He's like, you think you're going to go on LWOP and we're just going to hold a slot for you? And I said, you know what? No, because if I go on LWOP, I'll actually probably lose a step. You know, I won't be as good as I was a year previously. I said, you know, I think I just went into this entire situation with a fatuous mindset, and it's my fault. And it is, because I came in with the Jason Bourne mindset, thinking that that's legitimately what it would be like, you know, like super fucking high speed all day long and streamlined. And you run into the bureaucracy and it stifles you, you know, and there's tape everywhere and you get stuck in it and it's a huge quagmire. And so every tour that I had, whether it was, you know, back to back Afghanistan or working with the Syrian civil war, it was never what I wanted to do, or is never what even my boss wanted to do or approved, or even what like David Petraeus, the director at the time, had approved. It would then have to go up another level to the DNI. and then it would have to go up another level and eventually hit the White House and then hit their whole core of people before it got to the president, because this is covert action and he needs to sign it. And so everything I was doing, it just was like, this isn't working, you know? And that started even from my first tour, when I first got there, as you mentioned, landing and people didn't even know I was supposed to be there.
Right.
And it's like, okay, yes, my boss knew and my division knew and everybody in ops knew, but logistics didn't know. And it's like, I can't be the first person to have came here to like go do this job. And this is why I say, and you probably said it before too, we haven't been there 18 years coming up. We've been there 1 year, 18 times.
Yeah.
That's the reality, because people cycle out and there's no continuity and there's no like, you know, there's no like Passover. You know, a lot of times you come over and take over another guy's cases and he's been gone for 2 months.
Right.
You know, there's no appropriate handoff. So yeah, I mean, from kind of start to finish, and it's, you know, again, it's kind of my fault for thinking that, I guess I had a childish mindset. I kind of did grow up within the CIA. You know, I was a kid when I started, just thinking that it was going to be perfect and not realizing that you're still working for a bureaucracy and it's massive and you're not the only one.
Well, and, you know, the problem, we talk about the word bureaucracy, you know, on this podcast. And what I'll say is, you know, bureaucracy in and of itself is, it can't be flat. You have to have levels. It's just that what happens is the people at the higher levels of bureaucracy think that they are at the lower levels of bureaucracy with the way they manage. But they also want to act like they're in charge of the world. So they can't, there's no decentralization of authority or command. So the person at the very highest level wants to be involved in the very lowest decisions. You know what I mean? And that's what makes bureaucracy a bad name. So just the idea, when you say, all right, I want to do an operation, everything you just described, where it needs to go, resonates with me, because when I was in New York, the New York office, right, and that was, it's the premier office. That's where all the action is. That and, you know, LA, not a distant second, but, you know, second. So to get an action approved in New York was hard, because there were levels of bureaucracy. It's a big office, and the guy at the very top has a lot of power.
Yep.
But what they did was, if I had to do something internationally, which most of my stuff was when I was working terrorism, so I would work hand in hand with the CIA, then it had to go to headquarters. All right? So I just spent a month battling, get something approved in New York. Then it goes to headquarters, but it doesn't go over laterally. It goes back down to the lowest level person to get approved. And now five other people can disapprove this operation. And that's what would happen a lot. So there'd be the guy on the desk. He's on a temporary duty. He's been in the FBI for a year. He's looking at my operation and goes, no, disapproved. I call him, and this happened many times. Like, dude, I think you made a mistake. You need to approve that and say, well, I don't think this will work. You know, who the fuck are you, right? I immediately lose my mind.
Yeah.
I am coming to Washington to beat the crap out of you and then take your hand and approve it and move it up to the next one. And I did that. I didn't go down and beat the crap out of somebody, but I drove down, went to this guy's desk on several occasions. And would I do that again? No. But that's the frustration, and that's the frustration, and not from you, in the book. Can we just do this? Can we do this op? Why does every other person in the world need to approve it?
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, I do understand why things do get slow rolled in the agency, because obviously we have a lot of blowback, and it's at a very significant level, and it's kind of like when you guys are in the embassy as well as like a league at. I mean, it's a whole nother layer of, oh shit, what happens if ... ellipses, like this could ruin bilateral relations. Like we really need to fine tooth this one. And I get that, and that's fine. But like, as you mentioned, it could be something as dumb, and I talked about it in the book, as when is my helo coming to pick me up, because I got a meeting in Kabul and I don't get the email until fucking 6 minutes while it's IP inbound, you know, and I'm going, what? Like, I'm not ready. I don't have anything. Like, what? It's going to be here in 6 minutes? I've been asking for 6 weeks,
right?
Like, planning this meeting, you know? And so, like, it would be that type of shit that would drive me insane. It wouldn't be, I could understand why you don't want me to talk to dude from XYZ country because we have things going on over here with negotiations with the White House that I'm not privy to because it's compartmentalized. I understand that. But when you can't get on board and get me that email to let me know when the helo's inbound, like, that's the stuff that I would just go nuclear over, and it drove me absolutely bananas.
Well, yeah, and it's because it's a fixable issue. And again, I am with you. I agree that people need to look at things, right? A legat needs to look at something that's going on in his country, right? I get it. But does it need to go down to the lowest level again after it's already been to the highest level? Right? That's where we miss it. That's where we miss the boat. So if you had to describe this topic of culture, and if you take my definition, mine and Zach's definition of culture is nothing more than the things you do and whatever moniker you put on it afterward, whatever it is, what would you describe the CIA or what you experienced? You had to say, look, if the culture is the things we do, here's what we did. And, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's the things that you do, certainly. What I would say, though, within, again, like, I honestly don't believe cultures exist at the micro level. I think it's all bullshit. And I think it's all macro. I think there's brotherhoods. Absolutely. I think there's mindsets that are extraordinarily similar. I think dudes who join the SEALs are pretty similar mindsets, you know, aggressive A-type alpha guys. And I think guys who go and become case officers and deploy out to the field are very similar types. We are. We're almost prototypes. And it creates a brotherhood because just like you went through BUDS and you had to go through all this different training that's really, really hard, we go through the farm. And that creates this brotherhood because you went through some hell together. And so now you have a very specific way of looking at things and you have a specific way of doing things and you have different expectations. So yes, you could define it as the way we do things, but I don't necessarily know if that's the culture. Like for me, my brotherhood was the case officers. And then within that brotherhood, it would be the directorate of operations, but there were a lot of people within that that I didn't really interact with too much. But within case officers, that's my brotherhood. That's who I am the closest with. Those are me. I am them. We are interchangeable. Bureaucracy, though, in the federal government was the culture. Like, you will wear a suit every day. You will wear a tie every day if you're at headquarters, right? Even if you're in a station, you will be in a suit. You will be in a tie. That is the culture. I mean, that's the same at the DOJ. That's the same at the FBI. I mean, maybe it's a little bit more relaxed at different organizations, but it's very formal, you know? And so we coincide with that, you know? And, you know, it goes even, you look at, I'm on a GS scale, you know? And so is everyone at the DOE, so is everyone at the State Department. You're going, okay, we're paid exactly the same across the board throughout the federal government. And that's what's kind of setting the standard. And so you also have the EEO office, right? Like, who's going to come down on you if you make one dirty joke or something, right? So like, we all have the exact same people monitoring us. We have the exact same kind of format that we have to comply with because the CIA is going to comply with the federal government because that's who's telling them what to do. You know, the DNI is part of the federal government and they're telling them what to do. So I felt that it was very much trickle down. And when I would talk with guys, you know, again, like at the Bureau, it could be there, it could be at DOJ itself, it could be at Treasury. I felt like a lot of our complaints were always the same. Whoever the high speed dudes were within that organization at the highest level, field guys taking risks, doing stuff, they had their own elite brotherhood. They kept to themselves and they didn't really interact outside of it because they felt misunderstood outside of it. And so, again, I don't know that that would be a culture in as much as just like-minded people who went through the same type of shit and they realized that no one else did. And so you kind of just become really cohesive and you don't really interact with the other people because they just don't understand you. So I can talk about what that was like as far as that brotherhood. But again, in terms of culture, man, we were so fucking smothered by just federal government regulations and the PC nonsense, which we can also get into because that certainly is a culture. I just kind of stuck to my brothers and that was it.
Yeah. Well, look, but the unfortunate part about that is, and, you know, I appreciate everything you just laid out because it makes perfect sense. But even the brotherhood that you describe, right? People out there taking risks, you know, putting their name on the line, you still had to work within that greater culture.
Absolutely.
It's like the greater culture can smash the smaller culture, right? Mm-hmm. So no matter how strong it is in your brotherhood, it's going to get smashed by the ultimate biggest.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly what I'm saying.
Well, and I think that does define the culture. You know, one of the things we talked about when we said, all right, well, what's the difference? You had to break it down between the FBI and the SEAL teams. What was the culture? Well, it was a culture of yes and a culture mm-hmm. of no.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. I had to break it down, right? Every time we had an idea in the SEAL teams, we understood we got directed to do something. But how we chose to do it, we had a lot of autonomy. I want to try this. Okay, give it a try. Sounds good. Whereas in the FBI, you know, very rarely we had the autonomy to make our own cases. You say, okay, I want to make this case and I want to do this. No.
Let me ask you, do you think that that's the culture of your SEALs and your FBI, or do you think that's the culture of a military soldier and the culture of a civilian? Because specifically, I listen to all your podcasts, and when you talk about the PFT, I mean, that's fucking exactly what I went through. And then when I started working with JSOC and they started PTing me, I was happy. I was like, it's about goddamn time. Somebody has some expectations of me and my pushups and pull-ups and how fast I can run. You know, because in CI, there is no PFT. Right. Zero. It doesn't exist. And so that always drove me crazy because I'm like, I'm going into the field and I'm racked out everything just like the Omega teams. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm heavy kit too. Like, you need to be able to perform. Shouldn't they have made sure that I can actually do this? You know what I'm saying? But like, yeah, when you were even describing that, I think that that's the different mindset for like you guys in the military. It's like, that's unacceptable to think that there would not be a PFT and that you couldn't meet the standard. And if you don't, you're out because we can't trust you. Whereas to hear you say like all of these cats in the FBI complaining about and trying to skate the PFT, I'm like, hey, at least you guys tried to implement one. If you tried to implement one in the CIA, it would be mass exodus, bro. They won't even try to do that.
So, oh my God.
So
Zach, wait in here.
Well, I mean, so what I hear you saying, I think if I tie, like, your guys' stories are so interesting because it's life and death, right? And so, I mean, I kind of want to sit here and let you guys jam most of the time, but to tie it back to business, right? Like, I think of my tech team in a startup, and maybe we have three or four hot shots who we think we have a culture of doing it one way, but then that does get smashed up against the culture of our 500 person company client that we work for, and theirs is like bigger than ours, right? And lays boundaries on us. And that does get smashed up against the culture of Wall Street, who is the industry that we're working in, right? And at the, you know, I find myself putting a tie on before I go into a meeting, even though my culture at my company are wearing t-shirts, right? And then that Wall Street culture.
It looks like you just woke up from hibernation.
Totally. I don't wear this when I go to Wall Street, right? Because I like fit into their culture. And then like the culture of business in general, right? Business professional, we have to do certain type of things. So I think that's what you're saying, that like, even if it might be fun to sit around with my five guys and think about this culture we're crafting, but is it the truth? Maybe not, because when we go into these other bigger environments, it's getting suppressed by people that are bigger and more powerful than we are.
Well, I think also, if you want to talk about business, I was in business for a couple of years before I joined the CIA. I was in sales, and not nearly as long as obviously I was in government work. But like, I think back to those times and I'm like, okay, what was the culture? Because I knew that's what we'd be talking about today. And I'm like, was it a sales culture? Was it a logistics culture? Because I worked for DHL, which is like those yellow trucks, like UPS and FedEx and everything like that. I'm like, so was it the logistics culture? Was it the sales culture? Like, what was the dominant force here? Or was it the German business culture? Because it's a German-owned company, right? So I'm like, what really was it that drove it? And what I came to the conclusion was I never really noticed or really cared because it didn't really matter. I knew what I had to do. I knew what my job was. I knew what my expectations were. And I don't think there was any real matter of conformity other than attire. Really, wear a suit and tie when you're on the client side. You can take your tie off when you're in the office. That was about it as far as like culture existed in the office. And the rest was common sense. Like, obviously, don't harass each other. Don't use profanity. You know, it was like real.
That's not common sense.
Well, then that's just stupidity. It's not culture, though, right? Like, you're either stupid or you're competent. And I was thinking about that, too. I'm like, what? Because I really liked your guys' episode when you were talking about, are you a cultural fit? And that's what made me want to fucking puke all over myself. I was like, yeah. Oh, my God, if somebody told me that, I would die. Because I thought about this, too, as an analogy for you. Like, let's say you work at a mechanic shop, or you're applying for a mechanic shop and they work on like muscle cars and they're drag racing them, you know, and they are trying to hire somebody to make them faster. So if I walk in and I'm a nerd, you know, with the tape on my center rim of my glasses, but I went to MIT and I went to Harvard, and I can guarantee you that I can make your car 30 miles per hour faster. And you go, but he's not a car guy. He doesn't really fit into our grease monkey culture. If you don't hire me, you're fucking stupid. Like, you're stupid. Like, you're just a bad business person. If you go, we're going to hire Steve who doesn't wear sleeves because he fits into our culture better, even though he has a GED and he can't make our cars any faster, he fits our culture. You're dumb. You're just stupid. Like, that's just stupidity. So I don't know what to say. I mean,
Sometimes I wonder, though, why do we talk about culture, right? Like, why do companies want to talk about culture fit when people come in, right?
I think
it kind of goes back to what you were saying in the beginning. Like, you're expressing like a deep dissatisfaction with the bureaucracy and being able to do what you wanted to do on the team. I think almost all employees feel that at their companies at a much less level. Like, I can never do what I want to do because I have a boss and a boss's boss. And so in business, like, nobody wants to fire anybody anymore. So when you get these people in and then they feel super dissatisfied, they want to go to like, well, it's not a culture fit, right? Like, it's a hot shot and we're like slow, or he's slow and we're fast. So they want to try to screen it in the beginning. But like, the truth is, we do all find ourselves just super frustrated wherever we are.
Go ahead, Aaron.
You about the muscle car and not hiring the MIT guy.
Well, fuck. I mean, do you want to win or do you not? And look, here's what I say. You guys all remember who Terrell Owens was, right?
Of course.
The hot-headed wide receiver. Here's my thing. If you're talented, culture doesn't mean shit. And that's what I mean. Like, it never mattered to me other than attire. Like, I don't care what your culture is. And if you're my boss, you shouldn't really care if I conform to your culture or not. If I'm talented and I'm shit hot, who cares? Okay. Like, and like you said, I mean, if you go down to Wall Street, but the guy that you bring with you doesn't want to put on a suit and tie and he wants to wear sweats, but he's the smartest guy in the room, let him. Who cares? And then just go to the guys and go, this guy's going to make us about $250 million today. So he's going to sit in sweats, and they're going to go, yeah, does he want a coffee? Like, we don't give a shit. Talent will always supersede culture. And so you ask, why do companies talk about culture? Because you got a lot of untalented people who are lazy and they need an excuse. And so it's culture fits and things like that. What's our culture? What's our brand? What's this or that? Superior talent will always supersede culture. And you can take a talented person and put them anywhere. So that MIT guy, if he's a mechanical engineer and he's a genius, he can go work at SpaceX or he can work at your muscle car facility. Two separate cultures. It really is just two separate ways of doing things and two separate products you're working on. That guy's going to excel no matter what because he's a brilliant mind. So it doesn't matter what your culture is.
Well, and here's where I agree and modify, not really disagree, because I understand what you're saying. And that's why I hit the term culture so hard, because what we describe as culture right now is not culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Agreed.
The wear a tie, the Bubba versus the MIT guy, that is not culture. If you had a true culture, if it was made up of the things we do, in your awesome analogy, MIT nerd would be welcome with open arms. Because if their culture was, we do whatever it takes to get faster. That's our culture.
Yes.
Right? So then it fits. right? And then nobody really cared. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm hitting home. Like, no, stop with the, I have a culture of transparency. That's bullshit. That's nonsense. Tell me what you do. And I'll tell you if those things create transparency. But what do you, you know, what do you do? So when we say, that's why the culture fit, we don't get hired because you're not a culture fit. What, okay, what is your culture? What do? If it's based on how you look, just say it. Like, we don't like people with glasses and tape on. We like the armpits and that. That's our culture.
That's an aesthetic, though. That's not a culture. You know what I mean? And so that's what I think everybody conflates culture with aesthetic or the way their office is set up. Oh, man, we have like open walls and cool art on the wall
and all this,
and ping pong. And we have free unlimited Coca-Cola products and whatever. I hope Coke sponsors you guys now. That. we have all of this. Yeah, and like Google, oh my God, we can take these long breaks and play and whatever. No, that's not what your culture is. Your culture is technology, and it's a culture of excellence, and they get the brightest minds in the world to work there. It's not because of their ping pong table. It's because of their pay, and it's because of their name. And they know that they can put that on their resume and work anywhere in the world. And it's a culture of excellence, and that's why they're there, because it's the best.
So in this vein, one of the things I get, I guess, you know, as I talk to clients and promote leadership, and we'll talk about, people ask me all the time, well, how do I motivate my people? How do I get them to stop?
Sure.
And I say, stop caring so much about how much they love their job. It's your job to create a good environment. People don't generally like their job.
Mm-hmm.
But if they like the place that they're coming into, if they're treated with courtesy, if they are listened to, if their ideas are heard, not necessarily taken all the time, right? They'll just love the environment. They know they have to come to work. Stop trying to make them love this thing.
Yep.
Where on the flip side, you can have a job that you love. I loved being a special agent for the FBI. The environment was so bad. Kind of a little bit about what you alluded to in the book. I had to go, man. I couldn't do it. So talk a little bit about loving your job, but the environment being so stifling for you. You were like, I got to go.
Yeah, it's both. I mean, I'll hit the leadership part too, but for your second question first, what made me go though was not the environment in as much as people. I mean, that's what it is really ultimately. Like if you have a shitty boss, he's a shitty boss. That's the person you don't like. If you have apathetic coworkers who are lazy and not doing their job and letting you down all the time, then that's what it is. You know what I mean? Like the environment was hostile. You know, the environment is a war zone, right? So like, that's your environment. I knew that going in and I enjoyed that intensity, as I'm sure you did as well. Like it's got its own juice to it. So that's fine. But the reasons I left were not just the bureaucracy, but like just the people I was dealing with, you know? And so this is why I always say, like, I have no bad blood with the CIA writ large. I loved working there. I loved my job. And I loved 95% of the people I worked with. They're so smart and they're doing great work every day with no recognition whatsoever. And so, you know, hats off to them. But there was that 5% who, like you said, would be in management. They'd be nitpicking something in the weeds that they had no business messing around with, that they knew very little about. Or they just wanted to prove things, like you said, to the point where you're sitting here, as I was with the Syrian civil war, going, this is just a merry-go-round. What am I doing? And I can only go around so many times before I get nauseous. So I think it's just time to get off and let somebody else get on. And hopefully, you know, the ride stops and they're able to do something. But for me, it's time to go. And that was entirely just people-based. Some of the people who were in charge. And sometimes it was external, outside of the CIA, you know, like way higher levels than David Petraeus, stepping in going, nope, not doing that. You know, that's disapproved. And, you know, that happened. But I think it was entirely people-based.
And it is. And you know, again, people create the environment, and that those people create the environment based on what the leader demands.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, if you're a leader, you know, and Zach and I talk about this all the time. You know, you can be in the FBI, for example, great things under the right leader, right?
Correct.
But it was lightning in a bottle. It wasn't the norm. And so when you got that leader, and there was a couple times chain of command was lightning in a bottle, and you know, then my brain went into overdrive. All the things we can do. Let me start typing up these requests because I know they're going to say, yeah, go for it. We're going to check. We're going to make sure we're safe. Let's let it rip. Mm-hmm. And people respond to what the leader's doing. The leader's mm-hmm. crappy. If the leader's negative, then all the minions are going to do that too. And then that's where you are as somebody who's willing to get out on the edge. You're like, come on, man, what is this? Whereas in the SEAL teams, it was generally lightning in a bottle. And it was that kind of turd in a punch bowl. You were like, what?
Is that the opposite of lightning in a bottle?
What's that?
Yes. Yes.
You're like, is this happening? What is going on here?
Yep.
That was former CIA case officer Douglas Louse, New York Times best-selling author of Left of Boom, How a Young CIA Case Officer Penetrated the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. We hope you enjoyed this interview, and if you're interested in his book, you can find it on Amazon.com, or you can also check the show notes for a link to Doug's Wikipedia page, as well as to purchase his book. If you liked the show, then give us feedback. It doesn't matter if it's 5 stars and a glowing review on iTunes, or a thumbs up and another sub on YouTube. We appreciate your support. The Leadership in Tech podcast is brought to you by the Technology On-Ramp. For the show notes and more about the Leadership in Tech podcast and the Technology On-Ramp, go to www.techonramp.com. You can find all of our older episodes there, info on our nonprofit, links to different platforms and sponsors, contact info, and much more. This show is available on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, Player FM, and anywhere that podcasts aggregate. For more about the companies involved in making this possible, check out Salt.io at www.salt.io and Leader193 at www.leader193.com. Tune in next time for another episode of the Leadership in Tech podcast. Leadership in Tech is brought to you by the Technology On-Ramp, associated and sponsored in part by Salt.io and Leader193. The show is co-hosted by Zachary Ruiz and Errol Dobler. Special guest appearance today by Douglas Louse. The intros and outros are done by Paul Maslany. The production is handled by Paul Maslany, as well as Carol Wood. Our RSS host is SoundCloud. Go there to give us a rating, as well as on Apple Podcasts and other platforms. Thank you for listening. Tune in again next week.
Tell me what to do, and I'd gladly do my job, but I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.